The Gripweeds, Strange Change Machine. 5 years in the making, the Gripweeds morph into a new phase of their musical evolution. They are the creators of strange new sounds, far out chord changes. The Gripweeds groove with the precision of a machine. A strange change machine. Switch it on. Dial it in. Turn it up. Strange change machine. From Rainbow Quartz.
This is Garth Francis, songwriter and guitarist for the Doughboys. Welcome to part one of the Gripweeds podcast, The Making of Strange Change Machine. Over the years, the boys and I have had the pleasure of sharing the stage and the studio with the legendary Gripweeds. For quite some time, this band has produced top-notch albums and performed electrifying live shows on par with the greatest in the canon of rock and roll. While the band unapologetically wears their influences on their paisley sleeves, the Gripweeds have developed their own identity and sound. With an envious back catalog and a string of scorching concerts that stretch from New Jersey to Liverpool, the Gripweeds have started a new chapter in their already colorful history with the release of their new double album, Strange Change Machine. Tonight we'll hear several songs from Strange Change Machine, and the band will talk about how the album was written and recorded. So hook up your iPod or computer to a stereo with some real speakers, and put away any valuables that may break easily because it will get loud. Singer and guitarist, Rick Ryle.
What can the Gripweeds encompass in our sound that we haven't done before and still sound like us? If there's any point to the album, it's that.
Lead guitarist, Kristen Pinnell.
What happened was we had so much material and had so many songs, and we just didn't know how to cut it down. And the songs were strong enough, so we thought we would put out a double record.
Singer and drummer Kurt Ryle.
We hadn't put out an album of new material since Giant on the Beach, which came out in 2005. It actually came out, so it's been about 5 years now. And we've just been developing a backlog of material.
Bassist Michael Kelly.
We're always into experimentation. I can do pretty much whatever, try anything I want to try, and then we work out and see what's best for the song. So I think this album really reflects a solid band sound.
We want to show growth, and we want to show pushing of boundaries, and we want to show people that we're not just out here replicating the same style over and over. We're a searching band. We're searching and growing within ourselves and pushing the boundaries within what we do as much as we can.
Here's a sample of all the songs on disc one of Strange Change Machine.
Closer to the sun. They're turning up the heat like Venus, Mercury. The man who sold the world can't see beyond the greed. Your world is turning me upside down. Your world is turning me inside out. Hiding in places, leafy mystery.
Well, we started the album back in 2006, and but we didn't know we were working on the album when we started. We thought we were doing new recordings for the House of Vibes reissue. We were going to add them to that, and somewhere along the line, we changed our minds. I think because the songs came out real good.
We haven't done we haven't had a release in 5 years, so we just decided. We had so much material and everybody was really into the songs that we would just make it a double album. And I was a little hesitant. I don't know if we'd be able to pull that off because it's such a huge amount of work. But we did it. I mean, I eventually wanted to finish the projects, you know. You know how it is. When you have your own studio, things can just go on and on and on, you know. So, but it's finished. Woohoo!
Don't you believe it? I guess if I'm going to summarize it, it's about when people try to tell you what you should be doing or thinking, and you resist it. You do what you think you should be doing. Wrote it backwards. I wrote the drums first, so it's something interesting for people who care about songwriting. I wrote the drums, then the bass, then the chords, all backwards. And that way I was able to do something very different and something more rhythm-based. The rhythm came first.
My style has been incorporated. I work with Kurt. We have two different styles of approaching the beat and music. I have a great interplay with Kristen. I did right off the bat with Kristen, and when she's playing leads, I hear what we're doing, and we work together and work off of each other. And with Rick, like going back and experimental things, I can do pretty much whatever, try anything I want to try, and then we work out and see what's best for the song.
I can sleep through the night, I can weather a fight, and not turn and run. You're a tight rope walk, headed for a fall, hanging by a thread till you're undone. When you're flying too close to the sun, close to the sun. Get lost in the haze of honey and wine. I can have a rebirth, King Midas reverse, from dust to sublime. Spread your wings too far, climb into the stars. Supernova heat is burning.
Slight departure for us. Just really, it's hard to say why, because I wrote the song. It started out as really just guitar chords and an interesting rhythm, and I think I was influenced by Paul Weller a little bit.
I guess one of the interesting things about this record is that it is a double album, but Kurt had come up with the idea to do a song medley. I don't know if that's the right word, medley, but there's several songs that are, they're shorter songs, they run together. They were all kind of written and moved around to work together, and they play off each other.
The Sunshower Suite was Kurt's idea. I think it would have been difficult to do something like that on a single album because it would mean that there's a lot of other songs not getting on. But I'm really glad we did it because in the double album context, I really like that suite a lot because it's definitely something we've never done before. It's ambitious. There's no padding. All the parts of it are all really interesting. And it does have a unified feel to it, and it holds together really well. I didn't write anything specific for it with that in mind, but I did have some material that I added to it that had been around and fit really well into it. So I'm really happy with the way that came out.
Tapping at my window, fragile flower, sun shower. Misty rain, sun shining, troubled sky, can't keep from crying. Sweet and sour, sun shower me with streaming raisin blue. Shelter me from sunny bursts of gloom till it passes over.
Part of the cycle of songs that is on the second half of the first disc or the second side of the LP. And I had it in my head to write a suite of songs that would work together and move into each other and link together in an interesting way. Kind of like an Abbey Road side two approach. Maybe a little more progressive than what we've done. I had done some work with a children's author, Danny Adleman. And he came to me with, he had written a book called Rockabye Baby, which is basically a takeoff on the nursery rhyme, Rockabye Baby, with a lot of additional lyrics. So he says, hey, can you put music to this? And I'm looking at this page of lyrics, and I go, you know, I don't think I can. It's going to be a huge, long song. He goes, I don't care. I said, well, can I cut some lyrics? He goes, no. It's a book. You can't cut anything. So I said, well, the only answer I can come up with is to write a bunch of songs and stick them together. So I had done that, and this was a couple of years ago, that I had done this Rockabye Baby suite of songs that, you know, change and move into each other, and I thought, well, this is something I really want to do with the Gripweeds.
Kind of an ethereal sounding psyche folk song that I wrote about the time that I spend upstate in the Adirondacks. Kurt and I have a cabin up there, and we spend a lot of time wandering around in the woods and the lakes and hiking, and it's just a beautiful place. The name Mistress Forest actually was inspired by an article that I read. She's actually a real person. She was the first person to come over from England when they came over to, I think it was it Jamestown? I was reading a Jamestown article. She was the first woman to come over on the ship. Her name was Mistress Forrest. You know, so she was kind of a pioneer, and that's kind of, I incorporated that into the song with the lyrics about how, you know, she would be, how she would feel out in the woods, and, you know, kind of thinking of myself in the same way, you know, wandering around and just experiencing the solitude and the beauty of, you know, she was the first person here. I actually read it in National Geographic.
Just
On the new record, the ones I like to play live the most. Well, just right off the bat, the first three songs at the top of the album, Speed of Life, Close to the Sun, and Don't You Believe It. But out of that, I'll tell you this, Close to the Sun is my favorite, and The Law.
When the sun comes early in the morning, it's the law, it's the law. When the blood runs later in the evening, it's the law, it's the law. Then I'm standing on my head. It's the law, it's the law. Understanding that I'm being misled by the law, by the law. Every gesture is recorded by the law, by the law. It's the pressure of the order, of the law, when I'm kneeling by the side of my bed, pray for the law, pray for the law, and I'm reeling from the dread of the law, of the law. A chain of destruction that will drag you down if you let it. So don't wait for your abduction or you won't be around. No, you better forget it. No, you better not.
The Law was written during the Bush administration. So at that time, I was feeling more in a protesty mood towards the government, in a sense. You know, towards rule. I felt there seemed to be rules being created that were oppressive. So it wasn't necessarily about the police or anything like that. More just, that was my inspiration, if you will. It was the Bush administration at the time. But I guess in a greater sense, you know, again, it's about again, a lot of free association, and I seem to like this Dylan kind of imagery. There's a lot of imagery in there about being confined and restricted and being driven insane because people aren't picking up on what you believe. Like, you see something and no one else is seeing it, so you're starting to feel insane. There's that in there too. So a lot of my songs tend not to be very literal. They tend to be open to interpretation.
Pat D'Annunzio from the Smithereens was doing a TV show called Seventh Inning Stretch. And he was interviewing all these baseball players that have rock and roll connections, and rock musicians that have, you know, are interested in baseball. And so one of the pieces he had for the TV special on ESPN was a segment with Todd Rundgren's kids. And so what he wanted was, he wanted a Todd Rundgren song to play behind the segment. And so he asked us, because he was working on the other songs at our studio, so he asked us to do it. So we did it, and it came out real good. We're really pleased with it. And as it turned out, they cut the segment from the show. So we had this song, and we thought, okay, well, there's another one we could put on this new album. We got a lot of good responses to people we played it for. So there was that, and then little Steven came knocking to put out the Best Of, Infinite Soul Best Of collection. And we gave him one of the tracks we had recorded in 2006, and as a bonus, unique song for that album. And we had some other things. We had to finish that, and we had some other tracks we were recording as well. So we were kind of wrapped up in that project in 2008. So 2007, 2008 was kind of given over to these other albums. So then we finally got back to the new album recording in late 2008. And by that time, a few years had gone by now, so we probably had, I would say we had 30 or more songs between us in various stages of completion. So, to answer your question, we had about 30 or more.
Has a song called Nothing's Ever Gonna Be the Same. It's a very slow kind of John Lennon-y,
piano.
And it's something that's very, very slow and different, very cool.
First of all, I would credit my brother Kurt for that being on the record, because I never thought of bringing a song like that in. But Kurt was open-minded on this record and really felt that we should have... We thought of this record as the Gripweeds' White Album. In that, we're not trying to copy the White Album by any means, but it has the same kind of approach of, we're going to widen the scope, do a lot of different kind of styles that we do well, and maybe some of the individual songwriters are going to bring in some more personal material that we might not have had before, because we have a double album now. So, Kurt was able to do that a lot with Sunshower, and I did that with Nothing's Gonna Be the Same. That's a very personal song. It's written about the death of... And it's another song based on a day. I wrote that after my father-in-law died, pretty much. So, but it's about loss. It's about losing a relationship or somebody you love or something you love. And I really felt that loss tremendously, and I wanted to express that musically. So, and I didn't want to just pick up a guitar and play a happy, bouncy rock song. It has a very slow tempo, and the piano seemed right for it. So I really went for the piano. The guitar that's on there came from Kristen, and it's beautiful work. Really, she does a lot of psychedelic soundscape, almost like, you know, dare I say it, The Edge from U2. She's very contemporary on it, and for her, very different.
Most challenging to come up with parts for when Kurt was in the room telling me what to play. No. Do this. Do that. Oh God. Well, some of the parts, it wasn't. So what I would do, here was the process, is that we would get demos of the stuff and we would use the FTP, and I would download it and I would put it in Digital Performer, and then I would sit down and work with it. And first I would just go nuts. I would improvise. And then I would go back, listen to it a little bit more sober. And then I would pick out what is best for the song and go with it that way. Then I would submit my part to whoever wrote the song. And then we would go over it there at that point. So that process, that's fairly easy for me. What's difficult is when we're recording, and this is, Kristen got some of this on tape, is some of it is just physically demanding. Like the one that comes to mind is Long Way to Come Around. I remember after I did the first take, I'm like, oh my God, my hands are shaking. There's the same level of intensity that I remember happening in Giant on the Beach, and we go through a run through, my hands are shaking, I'm sweating, because it's really about capturing a performer. And then you take off the headphones and Kurt would go, how was that? I'm like, I have no idea, we have to listen to it. So those were the things, was capturing that performance vibe, and some of the things are just physically difficult to play at the level of intensity that we do it, because the instrument I'm using, it's a passive instrument, and I'm using it to drive and create distortion on the amp, so I gotta push it hard. So you're going for a tone, and two or three takes is usually what I do, and but sometimes it's like, oh, can you just do this little thing? But that's what the fun about the studio is, going back, listening to what you did, listening to it with a clear head, and then coming back and tweaking your performance along the way. So mostly it was always not difficulty in coming up with the parts, but capturing it, getting it with the vibe, and again, taking Kurt's direction. So... But he's good. I'll answer your question. The hardest songs to come up with parts when Kurt sometimes lays the bass down. Because what happens is he gets married to a part, no matter how good or bad it is. And that's not that it's bad, but there's some things that could be different. And the writer gets locked into a certain way. And that's the hard part, then trying to resell what you think, oh, here, this will serve the song. Why don't you think about this? No, I want you to play it my way. So there was one or two of those where I had to actually recapture his performance, which is hard because he plays, yes, a guitar player, or actually plays bass like a drummer. And so that's not my way. And that's to cop somebody else's feel and note choices. That's an interpretation. And then we're doing it like three or four notes at a time. But that only happened once. Thank the Lord.
This is Kurt Ryle. Thanks for listening to part one of the Gripweeds podcast. Stay tuned for part two, coming soon to a computer near you.